Hi, and welcome to Read, Eat, Repeat. This is our little podcast that we do for fun. It's about reading, cooking, and all the other extra bits of life that we love just having a chat about. Sal and I do this in our free time. Not very much of that going on at the moment, but we've done our very best, and it's really nice to be here today. My name's Alyssa.
And my name's Sally, and Lisa and I met when our kids started primary school together. So my eldest and Alyssa's second eldest were in kindy together, and we struck up this friendship where we talked about cooking and the books we'd read, and it really has gone from there.
Yeah, well, that's fun, isn't it, to think that, anyway, it's nice to talk about something other than what's happening at school, at the school gate.
Oh, my goodness, the drama and the politics of the school. And together we have seven kids between us. Mm-hmm. Alyssa has four, and I'm a quitter. I only had three.
Oh, thank God. And the credit, crazy. I was thinking today, God, I can't tell you how many lifts I did this morning. School holidays for some and not for others. And, my God. And we've got two dogs. Your dog's a little bit more
crazy.
No, I was going to say a bit more chill, but
she's a Kelpie.
I don't know if it is chill. Maybe it's more obedient.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I like how you say that. So this morning she's become really naughty because apparently she's scratched at the door today and to be let out. So my husband let her out and then couldn't find her and found her asleep on our bed. She's enjoying her life as a dog.
Winter life.
Now, today we thought it would be good to kick off at the start of school holidays for anyone that needs a bit of reading or cooking advice if you're in a reading rut or don't know what you're staring down the barrel of a long school holidays of cooking for your children.
Yeah.
We've got some great little recipes that we can share.
And I feel like you've had quite a good reading session. I've been in a rut, I feel like. Well, not a rut, you know, when you're just so busy. And so actually it's probably a good collection of worlds here because you've had a really good running streak of reading. And I've been that person that's like, oh, my God, I just can't get into this book. I tried reading The Horse, Geraldine Brooks, maybe four times.
Book.
I know how much you loved it.
It's a dense book, though.
Oh, I just couldn't. I was like chapter two. I'm like, oh, God, this is just. Anyway, I've kept it because I feel like the time will come.
Well, maybe I'll put a little postscript on each of my recommendations for people, like for the mood that they're in for the book.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because mood. This one, the first one is called Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow by Gabrielle Zevin, who's an American author.
I see this book everywhere. Lots of people seem to talk about it. So the cover is sort of holographic with some clouds on it and it's sort of rainbowy.
It's designed from a game. So it's about gaming.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Which I actually thought I wouldn't be interested in it at all because I'm not a gamer. Mm. And I've actually never – it made me think of the games that we played in childhood and my – first game that I ever played was on a floppy disk.
Yeah.
MS-DOS. It was like green with the black background. And then we had where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, we had it was accompanied with a book.
Yeah.
So that's how old it was.
Right.
But this is a fantastic book. There's three main characters, and I just love books that are driven by characters rather than plot as well because you get to know the characters so well. Mm. So there's Sadie, Sam and Marks, and I just love Sam. Sam and Sadie actually meet in a children's hospital, which is a place that's close to my heart because my youngest, I've spent a lot of time in hospital with him. And it reminded me because they met in a gaming room at the kids' hospital because when you've got sick kids, one was recovering from a terrible injury in an accident in which his mum died, and another one had a sister. Sadie had a sister who had cancer, so there was a lot of hours spent in this gaming room, and they formed this beautiful friendship around playing. I think it was Mario.
Right, what an unlikely story. I mean, I suppose not. It's very makes sense.
So
but
I know
very interesting
quite. Some of the criticism I've told some of my friends to read this book and they've been really critical about the relationship between them. But you can't do anything wrong to me when you start in a kid's hospital. Like, I will protect them. Mm. So there's three main characters and they become like your family. So you kind of grow with them as they grow up from children to
adults.
Yeah. In that, you know, like a family member, I'm not speaking specifically about anyone in my family, but like they can be really selfish and even though they're smart, they can piss you off and they don't really communicate effectively.
Right.
They're like that in this book, but you still love them and want to protect them. It's got amazing narration and it's exquisite writing. So Gabrielle Zevin, this is like her ninth book.
Okay.
She is not a junior writer at all. And you can tell as soon as you open the first page, like she's really authoritative in her use of words and commanding. I'd say she's a master of words and she builds worlds. The other thing I loved about this book is that, you know, when our kids are gaming and they're talking to each other, they're talking to their friends while they're gaming.
Yes. Yeah.
It really does show the juxtaposition between communicating in real time
IRL.
And communicating virtually.
Yeah.
So I loved that.
Great insight.
About it.
What does she say? Does she sort of draw out the negatives of that or?
Definitely. Yeah. You can see that. But also when it's too hard to communicate in the real world, Sam actually creates a world for Sadie to be able to talk to him.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I know.
Yeah.
So I think that annoys some people, like why can't you even do it? But I just thought it was so genius.
Yeah.
The other thing I loved about it is all the literary references within the games.
Yeah.
Like it actually portrays games, not shooter games, but games where you kind of build worlds as such a dynamic and vibrant literate place.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'd never thought about that when it came to gaming either. Now, we talk about food in every book and there wasn't a lot of food in here, but I want to read out one paragraph which is about a persimmon.
Mm-hmm.
Demonstrates a level of depth onto every subject matter that is kind of brought up in the
have
book.
Have you ever had a persimmon?
No.
I don't know if I have.
I think they're quite bitter, aren't they?
I feel like I've had something like that in a tart or cooked, with lots of sugar. Something like that?
Yes. The thing, this is my favourite fruit. Mark's picked a fat orange persimmon from the tree and he sat down on the now termite-free wooden deck and he ate it, juice running down his chin. Can you believe our luck, Mark said. We bought a house with a tree that has my actual favourite fruit. Sam used to say that Mark's was the most fortunate person he had ever met. He was lucky with lovers, in business, in looks, in life. But the longer Sadie knew Mark's, the more she thought Sam hadn't truly understood the nature of Mark's good fortune. Mark's was fortunate because he saw everything as if it was a fortuitous bounty. It was impossible to know. Were persimmons his favourite fruit or had they just now become his favourite fruit because there they were growing in his own backyard? He had certainly never mentioned persimmons before. My God, she thought, he's so easy to love.
Oh,
yeah.
How beautiful.
It's an amazing book. I loved it. I give it 4.5 stars.
Wow.
Yeah.
4.5?
Yep.
Gosh, that's a lot.
I know.
It's near perfect.
I know.
Wow.
I loved it.
Oh, I'd love to borrow it.
Yep, it's yours.
Oh,
you can.
Awesome.
Oh, you've got to give it back because it's one of those books you that want you want on your bookshelf.
Yeah. Oh, how special. I have read a book. So when I find reading hard because my brain is full. I've been doing some teaching the last couple of terms and have been recapping many plays and novels that I haven't read for many years.
Because you're an English teacher.
Spin through Romeo and Juliet and all those kind of things. Anyway, so I've been a bit wordsed out, but I often turn to nonfiction when I can't take on characters and their lives. So I have read a bit of nonfiction. Now you have a couple of fiction books there that you'll go through, but I must mention this book that I loved reading because this is so me and I love an American. It's Michelle Obama's The Light We Carry. I love it. I love how she's from the south side of Chicago. You can just hear her reading. I think this is her second book.
Yeah.
In fact, I think this book was born out of COVID. So it's about how shitty things can happen, but it's about carrying a light.
Oh, like
and so she begins the book. I really love it. And I would I'd recommend listening to it as an audiobook if you're not that keen on reading it because you can hear her saying all the phrases are her.
And I love that.
That would be quite cool if you were looking for a new podcast or whatever. You could easily walk and listen to this or whatever you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really enjoyed it. There's a couple of things I loved in here, Sal, that you will love. Firstly, she does open the book talking about her own way that her family faced adversity as she was a very young child when her dad was diagnosed with MS. So they talk about how he had this deteriorating body that needed constant sort of surveillance of whatever they could or couldn't master in the day physically. So she would say even a bump in the carpet, he would fall over. So they'd go to sporting games and be like, okay, we're on field four, we're on field one.
Can dad
make it across this field, or are there going to be stairs or one step that we've not seen, or just all these really interesting ways of looking at the world, which I think so many families face.
Yeah.
Where they think, will this suit that person, or everything from is it too noisy here, or someone's in a wheelchair.
Yeah,
and she talks about that. It started with a stick and then it was a frame and then it was a wheelchair, and their family had to navigate that.
So much empathy within her.
Yeah, it's quite a beautiful it's a really beautiful opener where she talks about her family. She's got such strength of character from her family, actually. And then I also watched the Netflix show that she did in conjunction with this.
Is it good?
Yeah, it is good. And then she talks about how then all the things that we feel really came to the forefront of our minds during COVID, because we've spent our lives being really busy. And she says, being busy is a kind of tool. It's like giving yourself a suit of armor to wear. If someone's shooting arrows in your direction, you're less likely to register any hits. There simply isn't time.
Wow.
And then suddenly we had time.
Oh my God, yeah. And things fell apart.
So she talks about that, and she talks about the light we carry, that if you have a light within yourself and your family, that you can then carry that into your community, and other families beget other lights, and other communities, light begets light, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it can flow between communities and people, which I think is quite
like paying it forward. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're hanging out with someone who has a light, despite
I'm always drawn to hanging out with happy people, because it's like you feel so buoyant after you've spent time with them.
Yeah, yeah. So she talks about knitting a lot.
Have you ever knitted?
No, have you?
Only when I was pregnant. I knitted so much.
Really? Can you do the cast on, bind off, or whatever?
No,
it is,
just knitted like hundreds of squares.
Did you?
And then knitted them together in the end for
Are they? Is it a blanket at home?
Yeah.
Oh, Sal, that's so lovely.
I'll show you.
Well, it's just, she talks about knitting was a really meditative time for her during big events. She went micro.
Oh, my gosh. So that's really interesting, because I was sitting at a conference the other day next to this woman who seemed really nervous, and then she brought out a crocheting and was crocheting under the table.
Yeah. It's exactly what that same kind of thing
is,
I guess.
Calming down. It's calming. Using the hands.
Yeah, and I guess your brain. And she says actually you need to find things like that to help you get through, and she says maybe spend an afternoon wallpapering your bathroom, baking bread, doing nail art, making jewelry. It could be 2 hours spent meticulously producing your mum's fried chicken recipe, or 10 hours building a miniature replica of the Notre Dame in your basement. But give yourself the gift of absorption.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my kids had to see a pediatrician, and they said that they need a colouring book, like a beautiful colouring book, like that mindful.
Yeah.
Colouring to help them.
I love a colouring book. That's quite a...
Yeah, I can never finish it though. Mm.
Well, yeah. She also has this awesome part which she talks about in the show. So if you've got Netflix, you could see this part.
Is it called All the Light We Carry?
I don't know if the Netflix one's called the same. I think if you just look up Michelle Obama, it'll just come up.
Yeah.
She does it with Oprah. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It's awesome. Barack on there?
No. Oh, but she talks about him. And anyway, she talks about her kitchen table of friends, which is she's cultivated this group of women who are her best friends. And she came to talking about it because Oprah said she was going to host Michelle's 50th birthday party. And Barack calls and says, okay, she's got 12 friends who are coming to this thing. And then Oprah goes, nobody's got 12 friends and unless they're Jesus, right? And even then, one of them were dodgy. So she's like, I don't understand. How you got 12 friends? And then Michelle Obama's like, I've just created these friendships over time, whether they're my kids' friends, parents, or people from law school or whatever it's been. It was really nice. And she said, I've got young friends, I've got old friends, all different ages. She said, I like to think of friends as like daisies, like they just pop up. But also she says, you have to nurture that friendship. Yeah. She said, I'm very hardcore about nurturing friendships to the point where my friends are like, do we have to go on that weekend away? And she's like, yes, we do.
So do the friends have to be friends with each other?
No, I don't think. No, they're not friends with each other.
Okay.
But I mean, you're all friends with Michelle Obama. I think you'd get past that. I think you'd move on. She said, like, they all went to Camp David and had this meditation weekend, and it was not to be any drinking or sugar or something. And then all the friends were like, this sucks. We love you, but
some champagne.
Yeah, we've got a weekend off and we're all busy. And so she was like, then she spurs off into a whole paragraph and pages about it's about giving and taking as well. And yeah, it's a really, I really enjoyed it. I love Michelle Obama. Yeah, it's really cool. Aww. Just easy. It was really easy, but a beautiful book. I never ever closed the page going, oh shit.
Like, I can see your light.
Yeah.
As
yeah.
you're talking about
it's the light I carry. Just spread your light. It does have a bit of that about it. It's a bit American.
Yeah, but I like that.
But, you know, bring it. So you've got a couple of Australian author books there?
Yes, I do. So two
with good food, did you say?
Amazing food in both of these novels. So the first one is called All That's Left Unsaid by Tracy Lien. So she is a Vietnamese author, and this is set in Cabramatta.
Oh yeah.
And both of the books. Oh, so this one,
I've heard of this book.
Oh my gosh, it
maybe
is
she was
so
interviewed
good.
On Conversations or something.
Maybe.
Or, yeah.
I haven't heard an interview, but I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
So basically the premise is that there's this beautiful boy called Denny who's a really good student, and he is brutally murdered in the Lucky Eight restaurant in Cabramatta. Mm-hmm. And the police kind of write it off because
This is not true, but it could be true.
It could be true. He's brutally murdered. The police are kind of a little bit uninterested in. They write it off as a gang-related warfare because it was by a gang member, they think, who brutally stomped him to death in front of teachers at the Year 12 graduation.
And this is set party. Today.
Yep, yeah, in Cabramatta.
Right. Oh, wow.
And so his beautiful sister, who's called Key, she is a journalism student, or I think she's just got her first job as a journalist, and so she takes on herself to investigate what's happened.
Oh.
And in doing so, she unravels a lot of stuff about her past. There's a lot of trauma from the immigration process to Australia. So these immigrants have left behind a life that they actually really loved in Vietnam.
Oh, right.
But they had to leave because of political pressure. And she really poses the question, you know, is their life better here? Like, look at them. They're in Cabramatta. They've built this community around them, but their kid's just been murdered. There is still the same issues that there were in Vietnam with drugs and heroin and gangs and political unrest and racism. She also went into the representation of Asians in the media, like Li Lin Chin and SBS not being a real channel. I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
But the whole thing was that no one cared that this beautiful boy had died.
Right. And so she investigates it and then.
Yes, and there is a resolution in the end.
Okay.
But it was a really great novel. Yeah. I loved it. I'm going to give it 3.5.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
What's the food? That'd be some good food in
there. So much food. So buns and noodles. King crab in garlic sauce. Is it pho or pho? I never know.
Oh, I don't know. I would call it a pho, but that might be a different type of
rice noodles, fish sauce. Like there's food within it, and it really is, because he also died at a restaurant. There's lots of food around that. I really, really rate it. It also shows, one of my friends read it, and one of her family members is Vietnamese, and she said she actually understands so much about the culture from reading this book.
Oh, that's good. Also, do you know what it sounds
quite
a bit like?
Private family.
There's a big movement for this book that my girls have read. Don't know if it's overly appropriate. The Good Girl's Guide to Murder. It's always on the top 10 list on Booktopia.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Right? Yeah, and she's got two other books. So I bought
it
for my
kids' book.
Well, I would say it's a tween book.
Yeah, okay.
I bought it for my eldest daughter, who can just cope with that kind of thing. There's a murder, which is initially a suicide, and then this friend investigates it and then discovers
that
it
wasn't. That's a great way to talk about those things.
It was, but then my youngest daughter read it, and she's probably not as equipped. And so and then she had to write a book review for school.
On it.
Yes.
She chose that one.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
And then I had to – I put a post-it in her homework book for the teacher. Hey, I'm across this. Talking about it at home.
Oh, my gosh. I've had a similar thing with my two daughters, because my eldest one reads one about this the mum died and then she was an orphan, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Heavy.
She read it, was fine, but it was called Tilda, which is the name of my other kid. So she started reading it and she was like,
What the hell? That's exactly what
I'm
happened.
I'm not sleeping. I can't do this. I was like, whoa, okay. Let's take this back. Hide it for a few more years and then bring it out again.
So now we're faced with the dilemma. Do you hide it and close up the book, or do you finish and resolve the story?
Well, usually I wait and read it with them.
The rest of the book. Okay, I'll do that.
Because my eldest daughter was like, Mum, she can't be reading this. Yeah. This is not appropriate.
That's what Maeve said about, anyway.
Yeah, similar.
One of those moments. Okay, and what else? What's your other Aussie book?
Okay, it's called The Matchmaker by Saman Shard. Mm-hmm. Saman Shard.
I cannot believe how much you're reading. Yes, okay.
This is amazing. I love this. So Saman, she used to live opposite me.
The author.
I know her. Oh. She's fabulous. She's so great. She's a screenwriter. She's like she's the head of news for SBS. She's got three young kids and she's written this book.
She's writing a book.
And she said it was one of the hardest things she's ever done.
Oh, well. And congrats to her. Five stars
for The Matchmaker. This has been everywhere as well. Mm-hmm. So it is it's a romantic novel. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to put that out there because it's
– I'm here for that.
Yeah.
I love a romantic novel.
Yeah.
In fact, hesitant to buy anything else.
Okay. Well, you will love this book. This book is for you. So it's light on, as in it's about a matchmaker. Mm-hmm. But it's also really heavy in that I've learnt so much about the Pakistani culture in Australia and in Sydney. Yeah. So it's set in Parramatta and also in Ultimo. There's a little bit in Chatswood.
You've done a bit of Sydney scoping, haven't you?
I couldn't believe it. I actually read these books one after the other. And so it's about kind of like the Pakistani or they call it Demi. What is it? Demi community. Desi community. Not Demi. Desi community, which is like the Southern Asian community in Australia. So it's like Pakistani Indian.
Sure.
It's about a matchmaker, and they're arranging modern day arranged marriages. So not – they're using a matchmaker to help their children find love within the Desi community because God forbid they marry someone Western. Out of their community. Yep. And the pressure on them to commit to this. Then what she also talked about being a third culture kid, which is something that Obama has talked about before, Barack, not Michelle necessarily, because he grew up in Hawaii. Mm. He had African heritage as well.
That would be very, very common. I'd say lots of people would be.
The third culture. So it's something that, you know, as me, I'm white as, it is not something that I've ever had to deal with. But Saman said that she's dealt with it. And I just want to read out a passage from this. So Cal noticed a book on third culture kids. He started to flick through the pages. They are citizens of everywhere and nowhere, he read, finding it hard to identify with one place, one culture as their own. Intrigued, he read further. Third culture kids were adaptable, did well in social situations, made friends easily. They are not of one place but of many. But despite all of the positives, third culture kids often felt alone, not knowing where exactly to call home or which culture to identify with.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing, that idea of identity, isn't it? And also then it gives you great insight into how now people or how schools and those sort of institutions are really trying to eliminate racism at just such a broad and
inclusive
huge
and
level.
Yeah. Diverse. Yeah. Mm. I like the ones that actually don't
What's
just
the food?
Pay service to it. Well, so because I know Saman, I messaged her.
Oh.
And she actually sent me a recipe.
Oh.
I know. I feel like we should do this more
wow.
often. So just let me bring up her message because I cooked it and it was incredible. So it's a curry.
Yeah.
It's called a beef keema. I don't know if I'm saying that wrong. But it's like an onion. It's got cardamom in it, cloves,
Yum.
Tomato paste, ginger, garlic, turmeric, coriander.
Cumin, oh my God, yum!
And beef mince, and it was so yummy.
Easy, anything with beef mince.
I know.
Any mince, I'm on board.
And doesn't have to be slow cooked for 8 hours.
Yeah,
it's like time efficient and it's really yummy.
And just with rice.
Yep. And so, no, actually, it's got potatoes in it.
Oh.
So I did serve it with rice and some naan bread.
Oh, yum.
I don't know if that's. Oh. Anyway, I'm going to put it on our socials in the next few weeks.
Did you take a photo of what you cooked so I can see a picture?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, yum. Okay.
The beef keema is
so good. Oh, well, that's awesome.
Yeah. Now, on to that lovely The Matchmaker.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some difficult people.
Difficult people.
The opposite of
Saman. So we were sent this book and I have since seen it around a little bit actually. It's called Difficult People by Rebecca Ray. She also wrote the book Setting Boundaries. Yes. She opens the book with like, hey, my name's Rebecca, but I'm going to be known as Beck and I'm with you along this this whole book. This is a really interesting and sensible book. So I wouldn't be – it's not like that the subtle art of not giving a fuck or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that. It doesn't have that tone. If you have anybody in your life or anything in your life that is difficult for you, job, community, family, friends, I don't know,
trauma.
Sporting group, any sort of thing that you have any interaction with that is causing you any difficulty – this is a really good book. It's got really great information and skills about how to deal with difficult people. There's
I
a
love
lovely
that book.
Yeah, it's really cool, especially
is it like pop psych?
No.
Or is it heavier?
I think it's a little heavier.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's a little heavier, which is why I say it's more sensible style. It's not just like, well, tell people to bugger off. It doesn't really have – it's actually
really – boundary.
Yeah. Oh, there's a lot in there about boundaries.
Okay.
And there's a lot about just different sort of there's a lot in there about being difficult yourself.
Wow.
And confronting with difficult people as well. And there's some really great skills in there that often I hear us teach our children, but perhaps we don't adopt ourselves. Like – you can see that graph in there. She's got the inhale, hold for 3 seconds, exhale. And so I think when you read those things, it really solidifies in your memory, doesn't it, that this is how I'm going to deal with this difficult situation. And then there's other really practical things like have a drink of water and take a break and do things you enjoy doing or take some time for you. And she says sometimes you need to think of yourself as like a toddler. That we're going to make mistakes and talk to yourself in that way that we talk to toddlers. Be kind on yourself. Take the time out. Think about what you're doing.
Oh, my God, you're such a lovely mum.
Oh. That's not how I'm talking to my kids. Have you seen that funny Instagram video? It's like, how I talk to my kids at the park. How are you feeling? Let's talk about why you pulled her hair. What did you feel like when that happened? How do you think she felt? And then it's like,
I can see you're feeling angry.
And then it's got them in the car. You are not playing with any of your toys for the rest of the day.
We are throwing out the television.
And then it's got some really good info in there about about boundaries and responses to people, like how to not escalate, how to be neutral, how to de-escalate. It's really great skills. So if you find that difficult, I actually would recommend this book if you've got that kind of tension in your life.
That.
Yeah, it's really good.
Not that I have that tension in my life, but I feel like they're some great skills.
Yeah, but even just for yourself, for things that are indirect that might be stressing you out or whatever, I found it really interesting to read. What do you got? What are your last two?
Okay, so this next one. Okay, I'm gonna do this in two.
And then we've got two recipe books. Two books in 2 minutes.
Okay, so this is The Things We Do to Our Friends. It's a book by Heather Darwent, another debut novel. So she's actually a Scottish author. I did that thing where you just walk into an independent bookstore and just grab the staff recommendation.
Oh, wow. Brave.
And Well, I actually love trusting other people to recommend books in a bookshop.
Yeah, but how do you know?
Well,
there's 6 recommendations. I'm like, well, how do I know that something that Frank likes is something Bev?
It had a little hand. Yeah, it had a little handwritten note. And I was like, yep, I'm going to trust this. Bought it, took it on my holiday. I read the first chapter and couldn't sleep that night.
Oh.
I was so unprepared for it. It is so dark.
Oh.
And so awful.
Oh, God.
And so suspenseful.
See?
And I actually had a panic attack and couldn't sleep. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I wasn't prepared for it. But if you are in the mood for a dark kind of sadomasochistic look on take on friendship, and when I say like sadomasochistic, it's flipped because it's like what women are doing to men. Mm. Anyway, it is really evil, and it kind of investigates kind of groupthink and the power of personalities and manipulation. So maybe it's a good segue from difficult people to reading this. The other thing that I wanted to talk about, though, is there was so much food throughout, but food was evil. It's like it had decadent and evil undertones whenever it was used, and I just thought it was really interesting to have food represented like that.
Yeah.
So the mushroom risotto is like mushrooms became warm slugs that stuck to his throat.
Oh, my God, I'll never be able to eat that again.
I know. Corn fried in butter and laced with herbs. Vegetable stews, creamy cauliflower gratin, yolk yellow souffle, pasta coated in cheap American cheese, and kind of the food congeals and turns to grey glue as night falls.
That is.
It's really dark, but it's actually.
What are you giving it out of 5?
3 stars. Good, just because the
writing is
incredible. Mm. Now, my last book is another Australian author, and this is her first book, and her name is Diane Yarwood. The book is called The Wakes. Mm. Diane, which is I found this so fascinating. Mm. So she worked in accounting in Sydney, and then at the age of 40, she had this life or death experience, and she decided to change her life and write this novel. And so this is her first novel.
Wow.
Anyway, The Wakes, it's actually about bereavement catering.
Oh.
So how's that for a topic?
Like for wakes.
Yeah, so for wakes, yeah. So these two women kind of fall into catering for funerals, and then the story.
That a thing? Because.
Yeah, companies do it. So it's apparently it's quite good because funerals are usually through the week. So it's no weekend work.
And
most of it can be prepped ahead and frozen.
What kind of food is specified for a wake, though?
So the kind of thing is like lemon tarts, arancini balls, mini calzone, slow roasted beef, lots of savory and sweet buns, Persian love cakes, tartlets with goat's curd and strawberries, and then little sandwiches and scones. That
is a pretty good wake.
Book as why no.
I don't think all wakes are catered that well.
No. Well, that's the thing. But within this story, there is kind of their lives become entwined with the people they're cooking for, alive and dead.
Okay.
Which is good. My one criticism was that there were so many people. So many characters
too many
in
characters.
The, way too many. So I had trouble going, okay, is this the friends with that person who died?
And you're pretty good at
that. The caterer.
Yeah. Usually you can cope with a lot in a book. I can't. I'm a little bit more.
Well, no, I couldn't cope with how many it was, just because I think I'd read it after Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which is such a deep dive into characterization. Yeah. And this was very superficial.
You needed to break that up with a bit, Michelle Obama, my friend.
Yeah, exactly. But one recipe I wanted to share from it is scones is another food that they use at wakes. And I've got the most amazing scone recipe. So 4 cups of self-raising flour, a tub of like 300 mils of cream and a can of lemonade. Chop it up with a knife. Roll it into a dough and cut it up with the kind of lid of a cup. Bake it for, I think, 12 minutes.
Yeah.
Done.
I do that one too. I love it. It's my favourite lemonade scones. But I do think they're a little bit sweet. They are a little sweet. Okay. You can taste the
lemonade.
Mm.
There is a lot of sugar in lemonade.
But it's the best. Yeah. It's so easy. And your kids can do it.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's this great That's a good school holiday activity.
We should put that on too, on the look up whatever the one is that they do. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Put that on. That's good.
Okay.
Speaking of food, can I finish up with two cookbooks?
Please do.
One is called The Food Fix by Yumi Steins and Simon Davis.
I love Yumi Steins.
Yeah, me too. I really like her. This is a cool
book. We just read Welcome to Your Period.
Yeah, did you? Yeah, exactly. I feel like she's practical and cool and edgy, but also educative.
She's got a great narrative voice.
Yeah. On the front of this book, it's got a quote by Chrissy Swan saying, if you need to cook dinner, you need this book. That's the premise of the book.
Okay,
it's
great.
Not for Donna Hay types that like looking at beautiful pictures, or Stephanie Alexander types that want to cook.
It's like get shit done.
It's a get shit done book. It's great if you have a friend perhaps who's just starting to get in the kitchen themselves through whatever sort of life circumstance they might be in. I liked in particular two recipes in here, a chicken and sweet potato soup, which is pretty much, it's just a chicken stock and chicken and potato, but it's a really easy, simple way of cooking it for yourself and your family. And then the other one in here is carrot cake with olive oil icing.
Oh, yum.
Doesn't that look good? And it's a really actually quite an easy, straightforward recipe. And I find carrot cake not.
Could you cook this with your kids?
I don't think this is a kid friend. Could you cook it for your kids or with your kids?
With your kids.
Yeah. Well, you can cook anything with your kids, really, can't you? But
yeah.
It's stuff like, say, for example, one of the first recipes is instant ramen noodles, but good. So it's about getting dried ramen and then putting in a few veggies, eggs, and some spring onion and throwing it together.
Yeah.
So it's more easy for yourself.
Yeah, okay.
It's a food is fuel.
I'm a dried ramen kind of girl.
Yeah, so am I. There's a few other things in there, like she's got a dairy section and a salads and meats, but it's just sort of basic cooking and really accessible cooking.
God, Yumi's doing everything, isn't she? Like a rainbow
veg and halloumi tray bake. Like I would cook that.
Yeah, me
and
too.
And when I say accessible, I don't mean just for – like it's not cooking for dummies.
So it's – but it's good. It's a good place to go to for some new ideas.
Yeah, well
– and your repertoire.
It is. If you need to just add a few things. There's some nice salads like a gnocchi and pork in milk, guacamole, pea and pesto soup. It's good. But can I tell you my fate like this? I mean, geez, it would be hard launching a cookbook when Recipe Tin Eats cookbook has just been dropped.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I've seen that everywhere.
Oh, my God.
Same. And it's in the Sydney Morning Herald.
Everyone talks about it and all the time, okay? So I thought I need to get onto this book. I love it. There's not many books that I refer to often. The Stephanie Alexander rainbow cover one.
Yeah, I look at that one quite a lot. Yeah.
There's a Donna Hay book that I like cooking from and maybe a couple of Jamie Oliver's and stuff. But this book is going with them on the shelf. This is really great recipes. It is what the website is. I love it. I really loved this book.
You cook from it and your kids are going to eat it.
They're going to eat it. It's stuff that you want to have on your Monday to Friday cooking roster.
Yep.
It's like okay, can I tell you a couple of things that I marked out? Firstly, this is the one that she calls the one that started it all. One pot baked Greek chicken and lemon rice.
Oh, yum.
This is easy and awesome. She talks about it. The only thing that was different for me was she does chicken thighs with the bone in. I don't do that just because I've got kids and that's just too hard. So you just put in the chicken a little bit after you've already started cooking the rice, but that's awesome. It's like a lemon zest oregano kind of vibe. Easy.
Yum.
So easy. And she – at the beginning of each recipe, she has a little paragraph about each recipe. I love that because
so
it's a storybook, isn't it? Sometimes you want to sit and just read a recipe book. And that's great. Like she says on this one, when I first published this recipe on my website all these years ago, I can't believe how much it went off. Best chicken and rice of your life. Other people's words, not mine. Yeah. So it's really cute.
So good. I love the photos of her dog too.
Yeah. She talks about her dog and her dog's quite has played such a role in the business and the story. The other thing that I love is magic baked chicken fried rice. So good. This is life changing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Do they use frozen veggies in it?
Yeah. Well, look, I do. I just she says frozen diced vegetables. Yeah. I just was gonna do that anyway. But she says everyone says I love this. This is so good. And how can I add chicken to it? So that's what it is.
Oh.
So it's fried rice and answering the question, how can I add chicken to it? Because you want to, you just want that to be your meal. No one wants to be cooking fried rice as a side.
No, it's not a side dish in our house.
Not a side either. But look, there it is. That one is a little bit more complex in that there's Chinese cooking wine and soy sauce and sesame oil, and you probably need to have a few of those things in the cupboard. And then she talks about how she's always wanted to throw scrambled egg in, but in the end, because it's a tray bake, it's just too hard to do. So the only other bowl you use is to scramble the egg and then, you mix it through.
I just don't eat the scrambled egg and fried rice anyway.
Yeah, well, there you go. All the little weird prawns. What about a French sausage and bean casserole? Now, I picked this out because my kids love sausages and there's some white bean, like cannellini, but is it cannellini?
Cannelloni.
Cannelloni beans on the bottom with like a good tomato-y sort of thing and
yum.
Panko crumbs on the top make it nice and crusty and yum. And then this is awesome, a stuffed butternut pumpkin, and she calls it a vegetarian roast.
Ooh.
So she basically slices the pumpkin in half lengthways,
yeah,
and then puts it.
Actually, she looks like a
doesn't
a
look meat great roasted, meatloaf. Yeah,
she's tied it up with string.
Yeah, and she's left the skin on, so it looks like a little parcel. And in it is like mushrooms, lentils, rosemary, nutmeg, just stock and some rice and baby spinach. There's also some nuts in there as well. And then on the next page, she sliced it in half. How good does that look?
Oh, my God, that looks so amazing.
It would be quite cool to cook that.
Yeah.
I would really like to do that. Something a bit fun and a bit different. And then there's a bunch of – there's Guinness stew and there's quite a lot of Asian recipes in here, lots of Asian salads and noodles. And see, I wouldn't – I'm not going to cook spring rolls.
No.
I'm not going to cook – like those
funny
kind of
you
noodles.
Say that.
Oh God,
because
did you?
I actually bought this on the weekend after you told me last week to go buy it.
Yeah.
And Matt's like, do you know what we're gonna do? We're just gonna open to a page.
Oh no.
And he did it. It was spring rolls. I did it. It was spring rolls. I was like, except spring rolls, we'll cook anything.
Right? No one's gonna don't cook spring. It's never gonna be as good.
Do you know what I did cook the meatloaf?
In out of here,
yeah, it's so good.
I saw that. It
really
looked quite
yummy.
Like quite a fine textured meatloaf, though.
Yeah,
were you into that?
Yeah,
yeah,
it was so good. I haven't had meatloaf since I was a kid.
Do you know what I can't believe though? See, I bought mine. I told Sal, like the first thing I said to Sal is, "I bought this book, so amazing." It was $44. I feel like that's a push. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot.
And then you said you bought yours at Kmart. I bet you got it heaps cheaper.
I know, but I like to support independent bookstores, except when. That's half the price.
$45.
Oh, sorry about that.
Was the meatloaf good?
It was delicious. And then I also made the chicken fricasse. Fricasse?
Oh, frickin' chicken.
Frickin' chicken. It was really yummy.
Oh,
mushrooms.
Oh, good.
And cream.
You. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yum. And I saw a creamy chicken one as well. Like all the recipes in this book. Easy Monday to Friday ones, except the I find the Asian recipes just because that's not sort of
– it's just a little bit more hands-on.
Yeah,
bit more
for me, but see, that's easy for some people. They just know how to throw all that together. You look titchy and like you want it to end. Hey, do you know what I think we should look at next, just quickly, next episode? And I think we should do it more regularly, like try and be back here again. Anyway, Heartbake, you know, by that lady,
I don't know
she's
anything
everywhere
about it.
On Instagram. I wish I knew her name. She's just done a conversations episode. It's really beautiful.
Wow.
She split from her husband during COVID and she talks a lot about mental illness and different kinds of boundary setting. And maybe she's read Difficult People because she's got some really interesting things to say. And then through that, she found baking helped heal her.
Wow. So that's a common story, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Marianne Keyes, remember?
Yeah.
She talked about that. healing her. So I think we should do that. And I keep seeing yellow face everywhere.
Same.
And
I want to read that next.
Okay, okay, okay.
Sorry, and, I'm just okay,
you do that and I'll read Heartbreak. And kids' book, can I recommend World Cup coming up? There's a Sam Kerr little like football series for
kids that are maybe sort of 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
So good.
My daughter's reading it. Oh, when she's finished like the murder book, we've moved on to Sam Kerr and she loves it. It's really good.
Another kids' book recommendation is Runt by Craig Sylvie.
Oh, yeah.
So good. It's what like age? Roald Dahl-esque. I read it to both my girls.
Mm-hmm.
So
like pre-tween just.
Yeah, but then older kids could read it too. It's just a funny story. Mm. It's very Roald Dahl-esque. It's about this this really clever dog.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Called Runt. I love it.
I'm in.
Okay.
So nice to see you and talk books. I loved it.
So do I.
Love talking with you.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.